welcome to Unidentified Wargamer. Each week I interview a wargamer and identify them in the hobby. This week I've got on with me Age of Something, or better known as Matt. Well, not better known as Matt, but known as, also as Matt. How you going?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
No worries. How's your week been treating you?
Yeah, good. You know, leading up to a Middle-earth tournament this weekend, so something a bit different, my first one.
Oh, exciting. What way are you leaning with your Middle-earth army?
Angmar Mordor.
Okay.
So, a terrible alliance, but it looks really cool, and that's, you know, it's my first tournament, I'm not new to the game, I'm going to get smashed, so I might as well do it in style.
that's very true. I mean, you're leaning into a new game, so I might as well take this something that's fun for you to look at and paint and play with.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we're here, right?
Yeah. Are you much of a painter or a hobbyist?
Yeah, I do. Like, it's a big part of it for me is the hobby side as well. I'm a very competitive gamer with Age of Sigma, but I do love painting and hobbying as well. I am working on a Harkuron list at the moment, which is all conversions. So, like, I really love the whole side of it. So, build a big giant. It's an old pirate theme, so I built a giant like pirate ship for that, and I'm building a whole bunch of other like sailboats, chariots and things for it. So, you know, theming armies is something I really enjoy, and paintings both as a creative outlet is really fun, and then just that meditative side of it I think is always really fun as well. I just, you know, good way to chill out.
Oh, that sounds very cool. Have you got I'll try and get some photos from you, and maybe you can post them up later on so people can have a look at some of the topics we're talking about then.
Oh, I made a terrible trailer on my phone for the ship the other day. It's on Twitter, so people can see it there.
All right, I'll have to repost it for you then. I think I did see it in my feed at one point, so I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about there, but I'll pass it along so the listeners can have a look as well.
Great.
Because you were part of the Western Australia scene, is that correct?
Yeah. So over here in Perth, part of our little community.
How do you find the hobby in the gaming scene over there? Because we don't, on the eastern side, we don't really hear a whole lot about Western Australia.
Yeah, as usual with WA, we're secluded, and we've got a funny little scene over here. Very much in like a, I guess, a bit of a, almost like a rebuild kind of stage at the moment. We had a real drop off the last couple of years, and then we do have a core, you know, a lot of people who are really passionate about the game, but also just very welcoming, very fun to play with. You know, it's rare to get a bad game with anyone in Perth. And that's kind of paying some dividends recently. There's been a lot of new people coming into our scene as of late.
Oh, that's good to hear then.
And, you know, that is what it is. You're running a cycle. You're going to get that sort of cycle with scenes where people come in, people drop off, you know. Things like MCP and the old world's going to come at some point. They're going to take people away, and it's just going to be what happens. But we have a lot of people who make the place welcoming, and that's always, you know, that helps us refresh and get new faces.
How many people are sort of like involved with your scene?
Oh, we've had tournaments as low as about 12 people in the last year and a half. But you know, we've got teams coming up. The last teams was about 6 months ago, and that had 60 people.
Oh, that's pretty good turnout.
So yeah, we can get a few people, you know, for some events, but you're probably looking at somewhere around 20 people, I'd say, for most sort of standard 1 or 2 days for us.
And that's mainly just from the Western Australia scene, or do you get a few interstaters as well?
Pretty much exclusively WA people. We get the occasional person come in from interstate, usually if they've got friends already in Perth. So we had a guy from, I think it was from Adelaide, come over for teams, brought an amazing Legion of the First Prince army. But yeah, it tends to be pretty exclusively WA. Hopefully we can try and convince some Eastern Staters to come over at some point and play some tournaments and, I don't know, check out wine country and the beaches and things. But yeah.
Oh, nice. Are you much of a traveler for tournaments? Because you said you're quite a competitive Age of Sigma player.
Yeah, so I've actually started traveling for a few tournaments. So, you know, I can't go too nuts because I, you know, need to do other holidays as well. And holidays also involve my wife. So I can't, you know, I can't drag around the country as I play tournaments. But yeah, we did a little, myself and two other guys from WA traveled over for the Bathurst tournament last year. So we did the GT there, which was really fun. And then I managed to make my way over for my first CanCon.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so that was really good. That was really good. So yeah, keen to do a few more. And you know, having done two Eastern States tournaments now, I've kind of got a few friendly faces over in the Eastern States that I, you know, that I've linked up with and can catch up with. And you know, they've already started sending me invites to other tournaments. So yeah, it's a matter of time really as to when I'm back over for more.
Mm-hmm. You become intertwined with the other scene already.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
How did you find coming over to like a different sort of tournament scene, being like CanCon and Bathurst GT and stuff like that?
Really good. I think Bathurst ended up being a good pick for us to play a tournament at, because it was a little bit smaller. I think it was 40 people, which I say small. All of that's like, you know, a pretty good sized tournament in Perth. But yeah, that was a fantastic tournament just because it was just full of like people welcomed us in. You know, the it was run by the Crutch Hammer guys, and they had their stream a couple of days beforehand, and you know, they mentioned, oh, there's three guys from Perth coming over, look out for them. You know, so we got there, and the first night we were there, Coach invited us out for some drinks and, you know, dinner with him and a bunch of his mates. So then we had, you know, friendly faces the next day, and you know, out for dinner that night with a bunch of, so yeah, we'd, you know, it was one of those tournaments where you sort of go knowing no one and you got 20 new friends, 30 new friends by the end of it, which was exactly what you want, really.
Exactly. Yeah. It seems like quite a little good setup for yourself then for your first like sort of interstate tournament.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I was catching up with some of those people at CanCon, which is, yeah, kind of, you know, it's fun to play Warhammer, but it's even more fun when you can do it and then catch up with other people, you know, catch up with some friends as well.
How did you find, so you went over solo to CanCon?
I went over with, yeah, solo. There was a group of us. I went with my wife, to be fair. She was very happy playing board games in the little board game pit.
Okay.
For 2 days. But yeah, there was a group of us that was supposed to go. Unfortunately, I was the last man standing, which it was just one of those things. A bunch of people had, you know, bills and things.
Life.
Life. Everyone got lifed except me. I have no life, so I managed to make it over pretty comfortably.
How did you find being involved with such a large tournament? Sort of, obviously not solo because your wife's there, but being more of a solo war gamer.
It was an interesting experience. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I guess I just so enjoy the game that I'm not too daunted by that kind of thing. I kind of got the right personality for that kind of thing. I literally work at a drop-in center for homeless people. So I'm used to having stuff thrown at me, literally sometimes, but you know, metaphorically, every day. So turning up and meeting strangers and just talking it kind of comes naturally to me. So I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I got to play five really, really good games of Warhammer. I took a very stupid list, but I managed to drag out some really fun games from it.
Mm-hmm. What sort of army did you take over then?
I took a Stormcast list that was running two Star Drakes, and then 1,000 points of whatever else I could put in there, because two Star Drakes is terrible and took up half the army. It was a fun list. It was Star Drakes and then Vanguard Paladors, the teleporting cavalry for Stormcast. I really wanted to play two Star Drakes, and then basically had to try and put together 1,000 points to make it work, which it didn't really, but you know, I just wanted to play them. They're my favorite unit, and it's biggest, you know, basically the biggest tournament of the year. So I was like, if I'm not taking my favorite unit to this, then what's the point?
Yeah, fair enough.
And yeah, it was really good fun. I absolutely was brain drained by the end of it, because it was not a good list. So it really took, it's a very precise list, you know, like most of the output is the 8 shots between two dragons. that's most of the output of that list. So just picking your targets and making sure you set up everything, and your movement and everything had to be so precise. I was always one mistake away from the whole game falling apart, and it was good. I went 2-3, which is, I thought, pretty good considering what I was playing. Yep. But boy, did it just like, you know, there was no easy turns in that one, and it just took it out of me, which I enjoyed.
Yep. I think it's the main thing. I've taken a list. As long as you enjoy playing the list and it gives you a challenge, and you're playing with your favorite models, I think that's the best thing to get out of an event weekend.
Yeah, exactly. I play Stormcast primarily because they are the army that I find I enjoy the most to play. Just the play style, you get those armies where you'll try something else for a little bit and you'll get a few games in and you're like, I just wish I was playing the other guys. and that's Stormcast for me. I just really enjoy that play style. Pretty much not anything within it. There's some things I don't enjoy as much, but certainly when I build my lists and I run my Star Drakes and I have all my stupid little shenanigans from teleporting and from Griffhounds and stuff like that, I'm always having a good time.
Are you then saying that your city's army has the maximum amount of Stormcast units you can fit in it then?
No, I'm running Harkuron. Okay. It's just Dark Elves. It's terrible. It's for a league. I'm running. We've got a league, and so when we went to Bathurst, they had spot prizes, and at the very end, they had a app on their phone that was like a spinning wheel that picked one person to win a spot prize, and it was an Anvil Guard Start Collecting set, and they spun it, and then, you know, we're all waiting, and we hear the stupid little like noise from the top of the stage, and it was for AOS Coach. He was sponsoring the event. He didn't want a prize, so he's like, no, you know, not me, thank you. So they spun it again. Stupid noise goes off, and it's Coach again. So they spun it again. Stupid noise goes off, and it's bloody Coach again. At this point, he just goes, I don't want. Gets up, walks up the stage, grabs the thing, turns around, basically rugby passes it into me, almost knocked me off my feet, and then goes back to where he was standing. So I got an Anvil Guard out of Coach for that. So I told him I would put it to good use and build a proper army out of it. So that's how I'm doing a pirate Harkuron.
Oh, cool.
It's terrible. Harkuron has literally no way to output in any way, shape, or form. But it's fun. It's a fun project. And, you know, it's nice to have some projects because ultimately I'm going to end up playing Stormcast anyway. So it's nice to have something that's going to look good on the shelves when I'm done.
So is this more of a hobby passion army project for you then, more than like an ice slap together army?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. The flagship, it's a Dark Eldar Raider that I've turned into supposed to be the Blood Cauldron of Blood.
Okay,
so yep. that centerpiece. So Dark Eldar Raider's got that nice sort of piratey ship thing, and I got some wheels to put on it, and I've got a bunch of extra of the Scourge Privateers hanging off it, and you know the Scourge Privateer leader in the back of it. So it's a full on pirate ship now. And that took me, I mean, on and off, because, you know, scratch building stuff, but it took about 3 weeks for me to get it all together, just, you know, dry fitting parts and blue tacking things together, and then walking away and coming back and deciding whether I liked it or not, and then slowly putting it all together. And, you know, the painting only took a day, but just getting it all together and trying to get that concept together, yeah, took a couple of weeks, because it's, you know, I had to get it right. It's not, you can't really, once you've glued it all together, you can't really do much else, but yeah.
And you happy with your overall look of the design of it?
Yes, I am very happy with it. And I'm glad it looks good, because I did have to cut a avatar of Kane in half to get it right. So yeah, it would have been a very expensive mistake if I'd finished it and it was like Homer's car from that episode where he designs the car.
Oh yeah.
It does a little bit look like that anyway, but in a good way.
Have you got any other major conversions to go with the rest of the army?
So I'm building all the chariots, all the Scourge Runner chariots and the Cold Run chariots. I don't know what they're called now. They're all the mounts, all the things pulling it, they're all gone. And I'm building sails out the front, so they're basically all like wind powered. So they're all sailing forward.
Is it like a Mad Max sort of sail on like sand thing, or are there more boats in water?
No, they're all on wheels. Yeah, okay. On wheels with sails. Yeah, it's got a little bit of a Mad Max vibe to it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. I was just trying to picture in my head sort of the base, like the base idea behind it all. What sort of, with your painting style then, are you sort of trying to push it towards a certain, like a stylized look, or what's your plan with the overall design of the army?
So I'm actually pulling this off of my, I did a Daughters of Cain project last year, which nothing too crazy. It was mostly just Daughters of Cain painting them up. But I had a sort of dedicated color scheme for that with purple skin, lots of tealy greens in there, and then like bright pinks.
Like, so I took that color scheme across. A very Vince style.
Yeah, it was a little bit, there's a little bit of cribbing from the Vince Ventrella color palette there. So yeah, I pulled that across for Harkiron, which works quite well as well, because they've got all the, you know, the sea monster cloaks and stuff like that. So the tealy kind of colors. And other than I swapped out all the pink for kind of like a coral, like an orange coral color, because I thought that looked really nice across it. But yeah, I tend to, when I'm paint, kind of create a color scheme that I want to work towards and then work within that. Try not to then add anything else. It does mean sometimes I'm almost painting two disparate things the same color and just hope you don't notice. But I think when you're actually standing there looking down on it on the table, I think it always really looks nice to me, and I really enjoy that.
Do you, with your painting and your army design, do you generally stick with like things that you're comfortable with, or do you try and push yourself with each army into different aspects of the hobby?
Kind of depends what I'm doing. So like the Middle Earth army I'm doing at the moment, I'm doing very, very quickly, to be fair. It's mostly dry brush, slap chop style, you know, just because Middle Earth models are so small and a lot of them are kind of weird looking anyway, that, you know, just a quick dry brush and then putting down thin layers of paint, be they contrast or just thin down regular paints. So that, like, that's, I'm not pushing myself really in any way there, but it's, you know, I'm really enjoying that process. But I will,
you could say like you're pushing yourself to like a speed sort of version of it, rather than spending your time like getting it nice and like looking well in that aspect. You're more doing a speed paint sort of style to push like your speed with your brush and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, all paintings, like it's, you know, like anything, like I play guitar and I'm lazy and don't play enough, but like anytime you're practicing something, you're improving your skills and your, you know, your precision. Even if you're just sitting there playing the same three chords over and over again, you're going to be really good at those three chords. yeah, but she doesn't say this. So like, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily pushing myself too much, but it's always kind of nice to also just do the basics for a bit. But I usually will have one or two things that are sitting there ready to go that I do push myself a bit harder on. I've got an old Fire Slayer model that I'm going to be proxying in as a Berserker. We've got like a fun little 1500 point tournament coming up for new people, so I don't want to take anything too strong. So I'm bringing a Lothisian Defenders, which is, it's just a Stormcast with just as many Idoneth Deepkin and Fire Slayers as I can ally in, and lots of, you know, Cities of Sigmar. It's going to be awful, but it's going to be good fun. But I'm going to try and do some, start trying to do some more non-metallic metals in there and things, which is not something I've done a huge amount of. So yeah, there's always one thing I've got my eye on that's like, this is going to be the thing that I'm going to really push myself to, like, you know, hone some skills. And then there's other stuff where it's just like, I just want to see this done because it's going to be satisfying when it's done.
Mm-hmm. Do you then like sort of struggle overall, because you've converted up some big boats and stuff for this Harkaran army? Do you struggle to, like, with your, you convert them all up and then you're like, well, I've got to spend all this time now painting them up to do justice to like the amount of conversion work you've done with them?
Not too much. I do a lot of painting. So like, I guess like you're saying, where you like push your ability to speed paint, I'm very unfocused as a human. As you can tell by the fact that I've already said that I like to paint, I play guitar. We already know I make videos. You know, like, I'm clearly very unfocused and can't stick to one thing at a time. So I guess for me, a lot of painting, like a lot of the skills I learn with painting is learning how to do things at a reasonable rate. And I think my skill as a painter is really painting to a pretty good level really fast. And, you know, like I have, I don't know what it is, 14,000 points worth of Stormcast at this point. So honestly, anything that's not painting the same bits of armor with the same bits of gold trim is an absolute holiday every single time.
I bet that gold armor and gold trim, I'm sure, could be quite boring after a while.
Oh, God, it's never ending. And somehow, despite having that many points, every time I build a list, there's still another unit that I need to buy to go into it. So,
bloody Stormcast players do it to themselves. Yeah, got no sympathy.
It's entirely my own fault.
So you've spoken here about a lot of armies and a lot of points of Stormcast. Have you been involved with this hobby for quite a while?
Not as long as you'd think, considering how much I just said I own. I technically started playing Warhammer when I was like 9 or something, but kind of like like 90% of people who play Warhammer, for some reason, my story is that I played as a kid, stopped playing as a teenager, and then came back as an adult. So I kind of picked it back up again in 2020 during COVID. So I was living in London at the time. So as opposed to especially Perth, where no one ever noticed it ever happened, we went on hard lockdown. It was pretty scary at the time. So fortunately, I worked for, I wouldn't say a great company, but I worked for a company that did at least pay out most of my wage, which meant I was sitting at home all day with not a lot of money because it's London, but technically more money than I'd ever had in London before, because I wasn't paying for the tube every month and for, you know, going out. So, and, you know, 24 hours a day just being at home needing to fill that time. So I talked about it with my wife before because she was really interested in it. Never had sort of experienced it, never really seen it, but just thought it looked really cool. And then our housemate, her boyfriend, played 40K, and he's an army boy. So he'd sort of come off base every couple of weeks and spend the weekend at our place, which was always exciting because, you know, again, trapped indoors all day with the same two other people. One, the new person coming in was just like the most, it was like Santa had arrived every couple of weeks. But yeah, he brought around his couple of his like Chaos Space Marines one weekend for my wife to just try and paint. And she painted up one, and she was like, oh, it's just like painting your nails. This is amazing. It's so relaxing. Yeah, like a day later, I think we bought the one of the old Stormcast Nighthaunt, you know, the starter boxes.
Oh, yes, yep.
And then, again, sitting at home all day, staring at the internet. So within about 6 months, there was a couple of thousand points worth of Stormcast and Nighthaunt in the house.
So with your housemate playing 40K, was there a reason why you leaned into the Age of Sigma side rather than sort of going to more the Space Marine 40K side?
Yes. So I guess, I played fantasy as a kid. I was a Vampire Counts kid. Classic Vampire Counts kid.
The Edgelord.
Yeah. But I just never found 40K interesting. I still don't. I think it's really dull. which shouldn't upset too many people, but I'll never get over the fact that Space Marines are wearing flares. Which, if no one's realized that, please go look at your Space Marine models. They have flares. They're like, like techno disco stars. It's weird. But yeah, I'm a big fantasy person. You know, like I love Lord of the Rings, and it's just fantasy's always been my jam. Lauren, my wife's kind of the same. She's a big fan of fantasy and that kind of thing. You know, we were playing D&D at the time as well. So it was just kind of always the thing we were going to do. We kind of convinced our housemate's boyfriend to get into AOS as well at the same time. So he went and bought himself a Sylvanus Start Collecting at the same time. But yeah, it was always going to be fantasy. And I think, especially coming back into it after, you know, being away for 15, 16 years or whatever it was. And, you know, I have a real soft spot for Vampire Counts and that sort of old school style of fantasy, but I think coming back and just seeing like getting Stormcast, who I just utterly adore, as being just they're so ludicrous, like the gold faces, the like printed on abs, it's so dumb. It's great. And then, you know, Nighthaunt's this whole thing of ghosts, and then you start looking into more and there's like elves that ride on sharks, and there's like dwarves who have like sky ships, and it's
very so
it was just yeah, well it look that just, it just appeals to me as a human so much that it's just like everything's cranked up to 12, and it's just ridiculous. So yeah, there was never any chance of it being 40k once I started to see some of the madness that is AOS.
Yep. It's very much an Age of Sigmar thing, I think. I don't think they would have gotten away with doing all that sort of stuff in fantasy, from what I've heard. It seemed to be more that low fantasy with a little bit of magic, whereas now it's just balls to the wall.
Yeah, and I found a lot of stuff in fantasy. Even as a kid, I thought a lot of it was really boring. I thought, like, this is the thing that'll get me killed. I thought Bretonnia was really boring. It's like Arthurian legend, but like, you know, you're like, can I have King Arthur? And Mum's like, no, we've got King Arthur at home, and there's Bretonnia. I found it really dull. So when they're suddenly just like, here's like bone guys, but they're like made from other bones that were ground into bone powder, and I'm just like, cool, done, sign me up. This is dumb. This is the best kind of dumb.
A dude hanging from a codpiece and all this sort of random stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm a big fan of like B-grade horror films and stuff, you know, where it's just things get so stupid they become really good again. And a lot of AOS exists in that space, but then around a game that's actually just really fun to play.
Out of the three sort of armies you've spoken about being like the main sort of order side, and like, have you ventured out into other parts of the like the AOS armies?
Yes. Yeah. So I've got so many bits of different things. It's the internet's a dangerous thing. Internet shopping carts are a dangerous thing.
Oh yes.
Stormcast is my main army. And then Seraphon's actually the army I play the second most. I got a bunch of really old Seraphon stuff that my brother played when he was a kid, but he's never come back to it. And if he does, he's not getting it back. So too bad for him. Seraphon's my other, they're the other one that I've really run at tournaments more than once. You know, outside of just being a project thing that I put together. So I do enjoy playing them quite a bit as well. But other than that, I've still got my old vampire account. So there's another project that's on the way, is to put them together finally, and, you know, bring them into AOS. And, you know, I got about $150 onto Etsy once from some 3D print Skaven, which I think did about like 1,500 points. So, yeah, you know, can't go wrong with that. So yeah, I've got like a little bit of Skaven there, and I've got ogres as well, which is some stuff I bought after, like on the way back from COVID. So when we came back to Australia, it's when they were still doing all the, like, we had to do the quarantine hotels.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, so me and wife had to go into a hotel for 2 weeks. So on the way through, we bought two new start collecting boxes, like, for new factions. So I got ogres and she got Disciples of Tzeentch. And basically then got someone to drop off some glue and, you know, clippers and paints and stuff. And so we could spend 2 weeks in there building models and painting and just playing like little, like, 500 point games. So yeah, I've got a bit of destruction as well. So I've got kind of a little bit from everywhere, but yeah, I don't need half of it. If not more, because, you know, it's all Stormcast all the way down.
Yeah, okay. But we all sort of live in that fantasy world where we're like, oh, I'll get to that project one day. And then you get excited by the new bright and shiny thing. And you're like, ah, it's been sitting there for a year already. I might as well just leave it there for another year and do something else.
Yeah, I think that's why I got really excited about playing Middle Earth, is that I got this whole new army and all these bits and pieces that I'm actually going to use, because there's nothing else they're competing with. If I'm playing Middle Earth, I'm playing those guys. If I'm playing, you know, AOS, I'm playing Stormcast. So
what sort of made you want to take the dive into playing Middle Earth?
Mostly because one of my best mates is a huge Lord of the Rings fan. And he's kind of one of the people who really got me into playing board games. So he's a big board gamer. He played, like, his family plays board games. His brother, just they both, between the two of them, they've got an incredible collection of board games and some rare stuff and some, you know, some really sought after stuff. And I just was at his place one night and I just went, do you want to do the Middle Earth game? Just almost as a joke. And he was like, I'll think about it. I go back a week later and he's like, so I've got two start collecting sets. I've got three of the books coming. And I'm like, oh, well, shit, now I have to buy something because I can't convince him to spend $400 on it. So I got myself one of the Mordor battle hosts to start with, and then, you know, just bits and pieces from there.
Mm-hmm. Are you joining the game then?
Yeah, it's a, I, really like it as a... It hits some of the same parts as Age of Sigmar, but it is different as well. So there's enough there that I don't... It doesn't compete with Age of Sigmar for my time. Well, any more than any hobby does. But, you know, I want to play Middle-earth. I want to play Age of Sigmar, and I don't want to play either one over the top of the other. I think AOS is still going to be my main competitive game. But, you know, I'm always keen to play some Middle-earth games, and we'll see. We'll see how I can get in the tournament scene here. See if I can get good enough to pull some sort of victory off.
Oh, nice. What sort of made you decide to get into the competitive wargaming scene, mainly for Age of Sigmar at the moment, and then we'll go into Middle-earth later on?
I think I've always enjoyed competition. I've played sport almost all my life because I just really like competing, which it has to be that because I'm the most unathletic person you meet. So like it can't be for any other reason other than I enjoy it. I've always really enjoyed competition and that kind of thing. I'm a very competitive mindset sometimes. And you know, I find then that often, you know, if you ask my wife, she kind of hates playing Age of Sigmar with me sometimes because I don't take my foot off the pedal. I'm a very like play to win all the time. So competitive's nice because it means I can do that and I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not, you know, I mean, I can play casually as well, but I just, you know, I've just found that my favorite way to do it is just to, you know, I build my list as gross as I can. You build your list as gross as you can. And we turn up and just try and abuse every single thing we can in the game within the rules to win. And I, you know, because of that, I also just find that, you know, people talk about, you know, MPE or things being, I love that stuff. The two guys I went to Bathurst with, the twins, famous twins over here in Perth in Warhammer. One plays Lumineth and one plays Nurgle. So they're my two of my main opponents. That's what I was going to in like a weekly basis. And I love it. I'm just, because it creates more of a puzzle for me. And that's kind of where I really enjoy that as well. Is it's like, when one of those, you know, when they throw out the Lumineth spells and suddenly half my army's shut off, I don't get upset by that. It's just like, cool, right? How do I work my way around this? And that's the part of the game that's the bit that really activates the pleasure center in my brain. It's just like, how do I solve this stupid puzzle?
Those problem solving skills. You love to flex that little bit of your brain.
Yeah. That's where I really and really like get the most enjoyment out of the game is just trying to come up with creative solutions. And, you know, especially when you have those moments where you're like, you know, where I've corralled my wife into a corner. I'm like, so he did this and then this happened. And then I just realized I spotted it across the table. And I was like, oh, if I get a four, I can do it. You know, that's the stuff that really just gets me going.
He still has his shirt on. He's not taking it off. It's not too hot over there. How did you get into playing your first tournament? What was your first tournament experience like?
So my first tournament, because I picked it up in COVID, was actually some of the TTS tournaments.
Oh, cool.
So played in a couple of Owen Jackson's Hammer Time tournaments, which I did pretty awfully in.
You sound like me.
Yeah. But they were nice and, you know, get to play a real range of armies and I guess really see how a lot of, you know, because you run into all kinds of people in those and some really good players. And see how they play, and you also get to watch some other games as well. So I found that like quite, you know, it's not quite as good as playing in person, but it was, I think, really good for forming myself as a competitive player because you get to play people from all over the world, and you get to see some of these people and see some quite incredible players as well. Like I know one of the TTS tournaments I played, I watched the final game and it was Philip Kartiev, you know, the Russian,
yes,
just megastar. And that was amazing watching that. Just watching him play is like, and just all the things that I frankly care too much about at the time. And I was like, he just does his thing. I was like, cool. All right. This is how we're doing it. And that, yeah. So that really kickstarted it. And then I guess starting my competitive in Perth, literally just, you know, rocked up to a one day or one point, and that is that usual AOS thing where I rocked up my first one day in Perth, and then you meet a few people, and suddenly a year later, you know, yeah, everyone's going, you're coming. So yeah.
Oh, okay. Very nice. It's always good to sort of see those groups of people sort of come in and pull you in a bit more and keep you involved with it all.
Yeah. It's been very welcoming, because I don't think I sort of played my first in person until late 2021. Partly because coming back from COVID, I went and studied, and so did my wife. So we were very broke, which, you know, having no money is not the best way to do Warhammer. But yeah, finally kind of got myself to rock up to a tournament, and I'm very glad I did.
Have you got a favorite tournament then over the past sort of maybe 2 years that you've been to that you've really enjoyed?
Yeah, I think Bathurst was just really fantastic. I guess it's hard. I won the WA Masters a couple of months ago, so it's hard not to pick that one, I suppose.
Yeah.
As being my favorite, just in a victory sense. But that was also just, where if I'd lost that last game, it was still a fantastic tournament. It was the first time we'd done Masters in WA where it was invite only. So you had to earn your way through. So it was quite a small tournament, but it was only 16 people, but you looked at the list of people and you went, I reckon 13 of these 16 people could easily win this tournament. So, you know, it made for a very, very, very competitive tournament. There was really no easy games. And even the, you know, not to throw shade at three other people in the tournament scene, but even those other people could very easily knock over anyone. So, you know, there was no easy games, and that showed in the tournament, because I won with a 4-1 and the other two top players were 4-1. So no one went undefeated. It was five of the tightest but most fun games.
Mm-hmm. What sort of army did you take to that?
So I ran a Star Drake, kind of Reign of Stars, but kind of not Reign of Stars. So it was a Star Drake and the Celestine Prime for your sort of long range stuff. And then allied in some Sentinels, because I know people really stress about how good Sentinels are in Lumineth, but they're 150 points, so they're pretty good everywhere. And then I had my secret tech, which was a Lord Arcanum on foot who was running with the Quicksilver Swords. So Lord Arcanum's probably been a model that's been a bit too expensive for since the new book came out for Stormcast. It's gone down in this new GHB, so it's better. But the thing that it makes it really good with that list is that the Lord Arcanum has two rules. One is that it moves endless spells an extra 6 inches. So with the Quicksilver Swords in there, you're moving them 14 inches every time it moves, which makes it really good for just taking out what you want. Doubly so in Perth meta, because I know in Perth there's lots of Nurgle. There's lots of some of those, you know, those little heroes are on like 4-up wards. I know there's a ton of those as well. So it was a targeted pick as well for specifically Perth meta, where I know that, you know, I know there's no Gash, no Tekla, so there's no big spell doms to stop me getting off my spells. But yeah, so that was a nasty little piece. But it also, the Lord Arcanum has that negates one wound at just any point in a turn. So every turn you can just negate one wound, which is not that useful most of the time, because you're running it, you know, you're saving a Liberator from dying or whatever. But when you've got a Star Drake and you've got the Prime, and the Prime's 8 wounds and very hard to kill most of the time, it's disgusting. The number of times the Prime took one wound to die, I think it maybe happened 4 times across the entire tournament, where it took the exact number of wounds it needed to die, and I just went, no.
That's so that handy.
Just the value you get out of that model with those specifically very powerful pieces is really good. And then it was just some Tempesters, because I barely go anywhere without Dracothian Guard and Griffhounds and Liberators or something like that.
Oh, very good on you for winning the Masters with that, that's for sure.
Thank you.
It's a solid effort there, getting the 4-1 and being able to pip everyone else out for the overall winner.
Yeah, squeezed a few points out, thankfully, which was nice.
And this was under the old GHB as well, was it?
Yeah, that was the last GHB. So that was, I think it was in November. So yeah, it was right near the end of it as well. Although they're only 6 months now, so everything's near the end.
With all these armies that you keep saying, you've got like Star Drakes and Lumineth with your Sentinels and things like that, how are you feeling about the new GHB coming in? Are you excited for it?
Yeah, I'm bouncing around on a lot. It's a weird one. I guess the fact that it's now moved so heavily towards you needing good book battle tactics is a real detriment to Stormcast. It means that my list probably, I was sort of, when the rules were first coming in, I was thinking like, okay, Star Drake's probably going out then, because part of what makes it good is that it snipes heroes because it's got a pretty solid shooting attack. So, you know, usually using that to get rid of a couple of support pieces. Can't do that now. But most of the good book tactics are dragon related. And then you also need a general that can kill stuff. And as much as the Star Drake's not great in combat, it's one of the only pieces we can make our general and rely on it to kill things. Partly because you can snipe stuff off the board. So if something's left on one wound, just shooting it from 30 inches away is a nice, easy battle tactic to score.
Oh, yes, definitely. Especially when you're with the general part as well.
Yeah. So it's probably still going to have to be something around that. I've been playing... I keep ending back in the same spot. I try different things and I kind of end up back at a real Star Drake supporting heroes, Dracothian Guard space. That tends to be, every time I go back to that, that's when I start winning tournaments or going undefeated at tournaments again. So I'm sure I'll end up at that spot again because it just seems to work for me. And, you know, I think often with Age of Sigmar, you can do a lot of different things, but what works for you just tends to work. And we see it all the time with people who play armies that aren't good, quote unquote. And they just continually go 4-1, 5-0 in tournaments because once you know an army and once you know your army inside and out, that's forever going to be better than just a good War Scroll.
Yep, I think that's the biggest hurdle for getting wins and things like that is knowing your army and making sure you get that down pack, because then you can focus on your opponent and what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, and you know, the Perth scenes, that in spades. One of the oddest things in Perth that happens sometimes is people will freak out about the new meta thing, and it's like, yeah, no one runs that. No one runs that. You know, one of the best performing players last year who routinely wins tournaments or places in tournaments, and you know, was playing Gitz, and he's been playing Gitz for years, and Gitz are terrible, but he continually just wins. I'm terrified the fact that they're now good, and he's got just so many of everything. But you know, like, you know, we just point at him all the time, be like, look, like, he's taking Gitz, and he's just constantly, he's my bogey player as well. I've never beaten him. it's just ridiculous. It's like my matchups usually are like great, and I can't get through him. He just never makes a mistake against me.
Oh, nice. It's always good to hear a Gitz player playing solid games.
Oh yeah, unbreakable mushroom Jesus, can't beat him.
And now he's even more powerful because Gitz is good.
I think I'm just gonna refuse to play him now. I think that's the only honorable way to do it.
Well, moving sort of changing subject here, I wanted to speak to you about your YouTube channel, because I think it's the main way most people have heard of you outside of the Western Australia gaming scene.
Yep.
What was your idea behind getting into your YouTube channel?
I mean, partly was that, you know, unfocused thing I was talking about earlier, where I just constantly want to do things. I guess partially it's putting... I've got a, like... Jack of all trades, master of none is very, like, should be on my tombstone when I die, because, you know, like, I do a lot of drawing. I like to play music. I've done, like, made videos in the past. Like, I just do everything, but not that well. So I kind of, you know, like, there's a lot of really fun comedy videos out there in a lot of different spaces. And the one thing I noticed with Age of Sigmar is, lots of our stuff's really long form, which is great, and I love long form stuff, especially with our hobby. It works fantastically because you can put on a long form like podcast or video or whatever you want, and then paint, and you can just sit there and paint. And so it is the perfect hobby to have long form content. But I was like, I wish someone did something short term. Someone, you know, someone would just draw some funny pictures and, you know, do some. And I was like, well, to be fair, I can do all that. So, you know, I kind of combined all of my mediocre skills into still mediocre, but slightly less mediocre videos. And yeah, it was just one of those things where I just kind of got the idea for it, thought it'd be really funny. I made it just to amuse myself. And the first one I did immediately started having people just turning up out of the blue. Like, I kind of expected to chuck it up on the internet and, you know, have 7 views. And that, but yeah, there's almost immediately there was people coming and being like, this is really good. I'm going to share this. And I'm like, okay.
Was your main idea behind it as well to be a comedy, funny short form? Or was that sort of an afterthought after the short formness of it?
Yeah, it was always going to be some sort of comedy thing. It was, I guess the videos I put together, it's really just trying to amuse myself. And now it just turns out there's like a couple of thousand people in the Age of Sigmar community who have the same terrible sense of humor that I do. So that's good.
I showed the girlfriend, yeah, and even she was laughing along, and she doesn't really know a whole lot of Age of Sigmar, but she just enjoyed your whole, like, your way you told your jokes and put the images and stuff like that. So even people outside of Age of Sigmar find it funny.
Yeah, I've had a few like people, like, because I mean, my wife loves showing people. I think mostly because she knows how much I hate it, so she'd be like, "Hey, you should do this thing," and I'm just like, "They don't know Age of Sigmar." She's like, "Yeah, no, it's fine. Watch this video." And then they sit there in awkward silence. People are like, "This is good, I guess, but I don't really know what's happening." It was always designed to just amuse myself, and then whatever happened, kind of happened, I suppose. There was no real long term goals or no real like powerful impetus behind anything other than me just waking up one day and being like, what if I made a video? It was just still kind of where the channel is now, hence the reason I haven't made anything for like 5 months, and it, you know, it's very sporadic.
What was the main idea behind doing the army reviews? Was that a part of a premise you wanted to focus on?
Yeah, I think it's just, I mean, I guess we all kind of enjoy talking Warhammer and talking armies and things, and it's, you know, I guess, especially, you know, I like to play competitive, and everyone who does play in tournaments and things and talks about the game constantly, we build this sort of funny language around armies are, and, you know, so, you know, something like the Deepkin video where I literally just started it, went, well, just get eels, and then pretended to end the video. Like, it's, you know, that only works because we all, especially at that time, knew the joke is that Iron the Deacon is just eels. There might be another range somewhere, but we don't know where it is. You know, like, it's just bringing that shorthand that we all already have for the game and what's funny about it, and trying to just animate that.
Oh, it works really well. I definitely thoroughly enjoy your side of the comedy as well. Do you do comedy stuff outside doing these videos?
No, but I talk a lot of shit, actually. So depends who you ask.
Okay.
That's the answer.
Yeah. And then what sort of future plans have you got going for your channel then? Is it just going to keep it sort of more sporadic, or is it something you wanted to cement down and work towards?
So I've committed to making a few more videos this year, because I looked back at the end of last year and realized I'd made 3 videos across a year, which as much as, you know, they do take a bit of time. It's probably the hardest thing about the channel is that, you know, one video takes anywhere from 25 to 50 hours to put together. With all the editing and the, like, you know, now that I kind of enjoy putting animations and things, that's fun, but it also animating a you know, 2 seconds worth of video, like hand-drawn animation, just takes so long. So that kind of drags it down a bit, but I did sort of, I've committed to trying to get at least once every sort of 2 months something out. So I do have stuff on the way already. I haven't finished anything yet, but now that my computer, as we're talking through it, is set up, because it's been out of commission for about a month, is back up and running. Yeah, I've got plans to sort of do that, and I've got a couple of scripts for some different formats that I'm gonna try. They're just ideas that amused me. So if no one finds them funny, that's fine. I find them funny, and, you know, like I will do something stupid. I did the, I don't know if you ever saw the fake painting tutorial I did. which was just the result of me not sleeping for like 3 days straight, and decided that if I painted an ogre in like ketchup and mustard and pretended to be Vince Ventrella, it'd be the funniest thing in the world.
I've not seen that one, no.
I don't recommend it, but it's there. But yeah, I've got some other stuff I want to try and branch into and do, just some ideas that amuse me, and been floating the possibility of even trying to take my format and do it for like competitive gaming. So how to play competitive Warhammer, but in the sort of the 2 minute breakdowns, because I think one of the things that surprised me from making the videos is that, you know, it's just me taking the piss mostly. And, you know, there are people found them funny, and that was the amount of people that found it funny was surprising, but that people found it funny was not surprising. There was always going to be someone out there who is as stupid as I am. But the number of people that comment on my videos and say that they are new to the game and that they were really helpful in deciding armies, which just like, I kind of want to scream at these people like, no, you've taken a wrong path somewhere.
This is not where you need to be. Yeah,
no, go watch AOS Coach. Go watch Vince Ventrella. They'll explain things much better than I will. But yeah, the number of people are sort of like new and come into it. So I am looking at trying to do something competitive where hopefully it can be that springboard for people who are thinking about it, where I can just, you know, word vomit for 2 minutes, and then hopefully that's the springboard that makes people want to get into, you know, go read some Goonhammer articles or go look at some of like Rob Honest Wargamer's breakdowns on things, where it is, you know, more in depth and really, you know, really kind of expects you to come to the table with some kind of knowledge and having, you know, been involved with some competitive gaming before.
Mm-hmm. I suppose this is the joy of YouTube, is it's like a melting pot for everyone, and people go, oh, I played this army, let's Google, let's YouTube search this name of this army, and then because you've got quite a lot of views on your videos, that pops up probably first, and like, oh, let's have a look at this, and then they find it funny, like, oh, I can just apply that to my army, then go there.
Yeah, I pray for the people who, during Total War, when that was coming out, and then my ogres video just got this massive spike in people watching it because they dropped the ogres trailer, and I was like, God, you guys are going to learn nothing.
Well, there you go. That's how you need to hype up your channel more, is get ahead of these Total War releases and get in there
exactly.
and drop something down.
Absolutely. Maybe if I started planning things properly, I could like really get ahead of the curve here rather than relying on dumb luck.
It's been an untapped avenue for you, but I suppose it's hard with a lead time that you sort of need for production and things like that, because obviously it's not your full-time job. It's just a hobby you do for yourself.
Yeah. We don't talk about the Five Slayers video that I got 70% done and never made it.
Oh, no.
So long, and then they released the new book and everything changed. And they did so many copy-paste books. Why wasn't Five Slayers a copy-paste book? Just for my sake.
I mean, no one will care if you put that out now, and it can make it ironic and be like, oh, it's like a video that was released 2 years ago, I've only just unprivated it now, or something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, that was the video that gave me the most grief trying to get it. Normally, I'm like, haha, this is funny, and I'll record it. And that one, I was actually trying to make myself be funny, which is a horrible experience. So, yeah, the minute the book came out and changed everything, I was like, good, done, in the bin, off you go. I'll come back to it like 3 years in the future, maybe. AOS 4, they can have the first one.
That makes sense, especially if it's something you're not enjoying doing. Trying to put it out there's probably not the best thing.
Yeah. I mean, there was bits of it I really enjoyed. There was some.
Just recycle.
I think I posted one of the bits onto Twitter because I just like I spent ages doing the from the old Pokemon anime where they'd have the like, who's that Pokemon, and the shadow, and I just had that with a shadow of a Fire Slayer, and it comes up, and everyone's like, I don't know.
Just gonna make a wild guess.
Yeah,
I think I have seen that one. That's for sure. It's definitely like. I think what helps with your content is you can do little snippets like that of little random things, and then they're very shareable and easy to watch, especially if someone's also already involved in the hobby and know the little joke behind it all.
Yeah, definitely. It's like I said, it's that shared language, I think, with us that we kind of already, you know, I don't have to try that hard a lot of the time because we already know what we think is funny about the army, so I don't have to deviate off course for a lot of the video, you know?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I did have a question with that from one of the listeners, but I think we've sort of answered it in a roundabout way. He wanted to know, obviously, when your next bit of content was dropping. Did you actually have a set date for your first piece for the new year?
It will be... No, I haven't got a set date. It'll be in the next couple of weeks. There'll be a new video in the next couple of weeks, depending on my free time. But yeah, there's one that's probably a third done at this point. And then with this tournament being done this weekend, I should have some free time to start doing that. I do know who asked that as well, which is he's actually one of my close personal friends and you know, one of the best people you can ever play Warhammer against. So
is he one of the twins or the guys?
He's not one of the twins, but he runs a bunch of tournaments over here in WA. And you know, anyone who wants to play a game, if anyone comes to Perth and wants to play a game of Warhammer, I can't recommend enough playing against Rich. He's a gem of a human.
Well, shout out to Rich then for posting a question and then also hosting a bit of games in the Western Australia region.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is next for you in YouTube or even in the hobby? What's your future plans for yourself?
I mean, I guess with the videos, it's I've got my six that I want to try and do for the year, and I'll try and, like I think it's the same about the formats, try some of these new things. Other than that, I don't think there's anything too crazy I want to do with the channel. You know, I don't have any grand plans for it. It is fun, and like I said, with the fire slicing, where I just binned it off. Like, I'm just, if it's not going to be fun, I don't really want to do it.
That's fair enough.
So I'm just going to keep trying to keep it entertaining for me, and then hopefully that translates to everyone else. And I guess in the hobby, it's I'm having a fun year, because I didn't expect to win Masters, so now I'm just going to like dick about for the year until Masters rolls around, and then you know, try really hard again and probably be really rusty and lose, but that's fine. I had a very good year last year when it came to tournaments. You know, one of my goals going into the year was to try and place in a tournament, and now there's a few different trophies behind me. So I had a very good year. won a lot more than I expected to. So yeah, I'm just looking at messing about and just trying stuff out. And to be fair, I find that the more you mess around with Age of Sigmar as well, the better it makes you anyway, because I think it's really easy to get locked into playing one very, very good list, and then when that gets nerfed, you haven't built the skills around it. You know, with Stormcast, I love to play everything in that book, no matter how bad it is, because the minute it drops in points, you suddenly know what's really good.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's kind of, you know, like, as weird as my Masters list was, that's where I was pulling weird stuff from, was because I just play with 90% of that book all the time.
And what about future tournaments? You got any tournaments planned for?
Nothing. Teams is coming up in Perth again in about a month's time, so I'll be doing that.
Is that a four-person teams or what sort of teams?
Five-person teams.
Five-person teams, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so that's going to be good fun. We I think we'll have the last two Masters in the team, so once again, we'll be going in as hot favourites and sure to bail out in the second round as we do every single year. I don't know why we're hot favorites every year when we do so bad every year, but yeah. yeah, no, teams is great fun. So really looking forward to that, and just, throwing some dice. And then I don't think there's any tournaments on the horizon after that. So it'll just be as they come, but I usually just sign up as they go.
And then with your Harker and army, is that like an army that's going to be your next thing for the next foreseeable sort of 6 months to a year, or have you got other things else?
Oh god, no. Oh god, I struggled to kill regular gits with that thing. It's part of a league, so that league's going for another month and a bit, and then once that's done, it's going on a shelf to look pretty probably, and then it'll get the occasional casual run through. But yeah, it'll be Stormcast for a while, and then I guess the big change will be Seraphon. Because I'm very, very excited for that release. Like I said, I've got a fair bit of it. So getting some of these plastic pieces, the Skink Riders, I think, are incredible. So that might be the thing that gets me off Stormcast for a little bit, because Seraphon truly is the only other army that I can play for a while. You know, the only other army that I take to multiple tournaments that actually really, yeah, but I can do for a bit. So we'll see. We'll see what do they do that book, whether it keeps the stuff that I enjoy. Hopefully we get salamanders back to their original point level.
No one wants that. No one at all wants that.
Oh, I do. I do want it so badly. Not for any reason other than how upset. Like, just the Twitter rage for the day would be glorious.
Oh, yes. I think especially since the models were so garbage, that did not help. Because people wanted to buy them and put them on the table, but they're like, oh, I've got to buy this garbage, put this on the table.
Mine are all the old metal ones, so the previous model to that, which is like better despite the fact that it's like 25 years old or whatever the hell it is. So I had two of them and then just had to go on scouring eBay constantly to find more so that I could run a bunch.
Mm-hmm. I suppose a good thing about Seraphons is another collectionist army is you can always pull lots of random different pieces here and there and see what works and what fits. And then, like you said, once the points drop, then you can throw in these other stronger things.
Well, Seraphon's really good because it's, you know, they're this like highfalutin magical army. So you can pretend like you're being really clever when in fact the book just lets you do a bunch of stuff for free that no one else gets to do. So you can just sit there and pretend you're a genius as you teleport for free and do mortal wounds for free and unbind because you didn't bother to measure your range. It doesn't really matter. Just put him wherever.
That's very much like the kids' book now.
yeah.
Well. A lot of stuff is like, oh, there's no dice rolling involved, and you've got three abilities on this one 80-point hero. Sounds like a skink priest, but it's more fighty.
Mm. Yeah. Good luck, Gits people.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the inevitable tide turn and Gits when they go from being the most beloved faction in the game to most hated within the next 6 months.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that fact because there's going to be so many goblin tourists jumping on board. But I am keen to finally get them back on the table and have like a fighting chance to get some good game results out of it rather than it just turning into a Kragnos themed list.
Yeah. It's you know, like it doesn't happen as much these days, but there's something always nice about that. Like everyone gets their turn at some broken bullshit for a bit, you know, where a book comes out and it's just a bit too strong. So everyone gets to run that for a while until it gets FAQ'd and nerfed and then it's someone else's turn and it's fine. If you stick to your army, you'll eventually get your time in the sun where they just, you know, the wording's wrong on something and suddenly you're like, cool, so this guy can do infinity attacks.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, goblins can pretty much nearly do that already. I mean, we can get on hoppers, it's like 210 attacks. So that's a lot of attacks on one unit.
Yes. I've not really run into them yet, but we'll see.
They'll be everywhere. We hide everywhere. Gits players.
Oh, there was already a lot of Gits players in Perth, so you know, classic Australia destruction like leaning. So yeah, there's plenty of Gits players, so they're all gonna come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, it's gonna be lots of us. Can't wait for it. The issue is gonna be there's so many tons of mirrors coming about. It's gonna be the real problem, I think.
Yes. Well, I'm fine with it not being on Gits because I can. The good thing about Stormcast is that I can build to beat literally anything because I have 300 War Scrolls that I can pick from. So, I'll just build an army that's just anti Gits and just hope I just get like five of them in a weekend.
Yeah, perfect way to get about it all.
Yeah. It's the best way to play. Look, you can spend all day trying to create a list that's perfect. Or you can just create a list that's really wonky and hope you don't run into anything that's good against it.
Yep.
And so far, that method's worked really well for me. So I'm, you know.
And then I think a lot of people also, like, when they try and build towards those anti-lists, they never run into that model. Like, I think I was speaking to Pat Nevin was like, oh, I built a list to go against anti-shooting. He didn't play against a single shooting list the whole time he played. And just like, oh, that list does not work against the melee combat army. So.
Yeah, that definitely happens. Or you run into the one shooting list that's also got the other trick.
Yeah.
You know, you build like a Cruel Boys list where you're like, well, you know, you can't shoot me from outside, so this just takes down the shooting list and you go, oh, cool. I'm playing Stormcast with a Prime and a Comet so I can hit space without seeing it. Sorry. Sorry, everyone, today.
Yeah, that's right. Awesome. Well, as we end up the show here, Matt, do you have any shout-outs or anything you want to leave the listeners with?
I mean, I'll shout out my club, House of Heroes. That's the Twins and Rich and a bunch of other good lads and lasses that I play with on the regular and talk a lot of shit with. And probably just the WA scene, just for being all good eggs and, you know, I'm sure they'll all be jumping on this one. They tend to be pretty good at supporting other people in WA when we're, you know, when we're doing stuff. So yeah, that's where the shout outs go to. Just WA, all of, you know what? All of WA, all 1.8 million of us or whatever it is.
I'm guessing you guys have a lot of like Facebook pages and stuff that people can jump into for Western Australia gaming and things like that. Do you mind putting them in the list? Because I think the smaller scenes, it's always nice to sort of get out there, places that people can reach other people in the same sort of area.
Yes, 100%. So we're mostly in messenger groups.
Okay.
Annoyingly, as someone who I guess was sort of newish to the scene because I came in, you know, ended in 2021, it's all in messenger groups, which makes things annoying because there's a Facebook page that no one uses. So myself and a few other guys try to rescue people from it every so often. But yeah, it's a bit quiet there, but head to the Facebook page or go into one of the stores like Beyond Odyssey, which is it's our biggest store. It's got like a 64 gaming boards in it, I think it is.
Oh wow, quite big.
Yeah, it's pretty big. Go in there and ask the guys there and they'll put you in the groups. So that's probably the best way, is just go into the store and ask. Don't go into the Games Workshop store. They don't know anything in WA. Although as far as I'm aware, that's a pattern.
It is a pattern. Worldwide. Yes. Yeah. I think there's some that are involved with the tournament scene, so they know what's going on, and then others keep to their own insular shells inside the Games Workshop that they work at.
Yeah.
And that obviously gives you the big disparity there.
Yeah. And you go in and you're like, does anyone else play? And they're like, well, it's just people in here. Do you have a table? No. Oh, okay.
I guess I'll just sit down and do nothing then.
Yeah, I guess I'll just build these models over in the corner then.
Yeah. Awesome, Matt. Well, thanks so much for coming on and sort of giving us a rundown of who you are and how you got into this hobby, and then also a little bit about yourself, especially with the YouTube channel, because I think it's a bit harder with the YouTube channel unless you're sort of doing maybe video logs and things like that, where you sort of get your face out there. When it's more of a voice, I think it's a little bit harder to reach people sometimes. I did have a question, though. Did you find anyone did recognize you at CanCon because of your voice?
No. Okay. No. There's a few people who knew who I was anyway, because like I said, I've been to Bathurst's and met Coach there, and he introduced me as Age of Something to multiple people. And so a few people knew anyway. I mean, I don't hide it, but you do occasionally get the people coming into the WA scene and join the messenger group. And then everyone will kind of tiptoe it around it for a bit and go, oh, there's this guy. And, oh, who's that? You know. And then I'll usually be like, I think there's someone in Perth who does that. just talking shit as usual.
Yep. Fair enough. Awesome. Too easy, Matt. Well, thanks again. Enjoy the rest of your week. I know it's a Monday for us here, so we've got a full week ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
But best of luck with everything else. And then enjoy your nice, relaxed tournament season coming up.
Yeah, we'll do. Thank you.
Awesome, too easy. Have a good one.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Unidentified Wargamer. You can find links for the guests located in the description below. You can find the show on Twitter @U_Wargamer, and I will see you next week.